From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, September 27th, 2022.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by Seth Rigoletti, leadership coach. With the podcast, It's Not Personal, conversations about making work more enjoyable and rewarding. SethRigoletti.com.
A Maine man was found guilty today of nearly a dozen charges after he joined the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. Charlie Eihacker has more.
39-year-old Kyle Fitzsimons of Lebanon was the first Mainer charged in the January 6th riot. During a bench trial last month, the Justice Department argued that he committed several assaults against police that day. In one, he reportedly hurled an unstrung bow at an officer. In another, he tried to pull a fallen officer into the mob, then allegedly injured the shoulder of another who came to the rescue. In a close-up photo taken that day, Fitzsimons has a crazed look as blood runs down one side of his face. His attorney has argued that he expected January 6th to be a peaceful protest of the presidential election certification. But today, a federal judge found Fitzsimons guilty of seven felonies, including obstructing an official proceeding, interfering with police, engaging in violence in a restricted building, and four counts of assaulting an officer. Additional misdemeanors include disorderly conduct and committing acts of violence in a restricted building. The Justice Department says Fitzsimons could receive up to 94 years at his sentencing in February. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Charlie Eihacker.
Meanwhile, an Auburn man convicted of murdering a Native Alaskan woman 30 years ago has been sentenced in Fairbanks Superior Court. The Lewiston Sun-Journal reports that 48-year-old Stephen Downs was sentenced to 67 years for murder and an additional 8 years for sexual assault. The 1993 killing of 20-year-old Sophie Sergi in a dormitory bathroom at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks was one of the state's most notorious unsolved murders for decades. Then in 2018, one of Downs' relatives submitted DNA to a testing laboratory, and it came back as a random match to DNA found at the scene. Downs had been a freshman at the university at the time of the crime. During sentencing on Monday, the Sun-Journal reports that the judge called Downs brazen and callous for preying on a random stranger. Downs has maintained his innocence ever since his arrest. In an effort to fight climate change, the Maine Public Utilities Commission today approved lower electricity rates for some customers of Versant Power and CMP. Murray Carpenter reports.
Mainers who use electric vehicles, heat pumps, or battery storage could be eligible for lower electric rates, according to orders issued by the Maine Public Utilities Commission. PUC Chair Phil Bartlett says the rates are designed to encourage the adoption of green technology and to help residential and business customers save money by electrifying their transportation and heating. Eligible customers would contact their utility to request the lower rates. The rates will apply to residential, commercial, and large business customers. Some of the rates could take effect as soon as October. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Murray Carpenter.
A new survey from University of Maine researchers finds that a majority of Maine voters support shifting state drug policy away from criminal prosecution in favor of treatment. Robert Glover, associate professor of political science, says most of the respondents support decriminalizing low-level drug offenses and boosting access to treatment.
The characteristics of those who are supporting those sorts of efforts, we found that it really held up across dividing lines. So things like one's political party or one's religious affiliation, whether you live in a rural community or an urban community, it's pretty broad-based support across the state.
Glover says he hopes lawmakers will use the survey's findings to inform state drug policy. Same-sex couples could claim federal tax refunds retroactive to when their marriages were recognized in their home state, under a bill sponsored by Maine's two U.S. senators. The legislation would affect couples in states which legalized same-sex marriage before 2013, when the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, a law that had denied federal recognition of same-sex marriage. During that time, married same-sex couples missed out on federal tax deductions that straight couples were eligible for. Maine Independent Senator Angus King says the bill would, quote, right this wrong by allowing same-sex couples to refile their tax returns for those years and receive any benefits they missed out on. 42 senators have co-sponsored the legislation so far, but Collins is the lone Republican. Independent congressional candidate Tiffany Bond says the government should have no say in personal health care decisions, whether about cancer treatment or terminating a pregnancy. Bond is considered a long shot in the 2nd District race as she competes against incumbent Democratic Representative Jared Golden and former Republican Congressman Bruce Poliquin, who both declined to take part in what was intended to be a live debate on Monday night. During a half-hour interview, Bond said she supports legislation to make abortion legal at the federal level.
By pulling back Roe, we didn't just change abortion coverage, we changed our privacy rights generally. And we really blurred that line of where the government and people are. And it used to be that our private lives were private and it just wasn't any of their business and they could keep their nose out. And I think that a lot of folks don't realize how sweeping that is.
Monday's event was the first of three live forums co-hosted by Maine Public and the Portland Press Herald. The three candidates for governor will debate for 90 minutes on Tuesday, October 4th at 8 p.m. And in a look at the weather for tonight, mostly cloudy with a few spotty showers in the northern mountains. Lows generally in the mid to upper 40s statewide. Tomorrow, more clouds with some spotty showers. Highs from the upper 50s in the northern mountains to nearly 70 degrees elsewhere. We should see more sun coming through on Thursday, but generally cooler, highs from the 50s in the north to the mid-60s elsewhere, and a bit warmer on Friday with even more sun, highs from the upper 50s to mid-60s statewide. Governor Janet Mills and former Governor Paula Page are both vowing to continue helping Maine farmers impacted by PFAS pollution if they're elected this November. Kevin Miller reports.
Mills told a small gathering of farmers and agricultural leaders on Tuesday that Maine is tackling the issue of PFAS head-on as it identifies and then tests potentially contaminated sites throughout the state.
Other states may try to hide it, shove it under the rug, but they can't for long. We're putting it out there in the open. We're testing as many sites as possible, and we're addressing those sites as quickly as possible.
Over the past 2 years, the Mills administration has worked with state lawmakers to set aside more than $100 million to deal with the growing PFAS problem in Maine. Much of that money is geared toward testing sites that may have been contaminated when sludge was applied to farm fields as fertilizer as part of a state license program. And Mills told attendees of a gubernatorial forum organized by the Agricultural Council of Maine that her administration has already started compensating farmers for lost crops or livestock and has been installing filtration systems on water supplies.
I have no doubt that our efforts and our advocacy here in Maine are leading the way in D.C. and across the country.
PFAS are a class of chemicals that have been used for decades as coatings in household goods, including in some paper products made in Maine. But some of the chemicals have been linked to serious health problems, including high cancer rates, kidney malfunction, and low birth weight. Mills and LePage addressed the forum separately, but they were asked the same question about the state's PFAS response. In his comments, LePage also notes that the state has a responsibility because the sludge spreading program was licensed for decades by the Maine Department of Environmental Protection.
They approved the spreading, they own it, they gotta fix it. And I think that's an investment we have to make, and we have to make it quick. And some of this federal money should have been earmarked for that immediately. When she got the $14 billion from the federal government, I'll tell you, some of that money should have gone immediately to PFAS, and we should be working on it now to clean it up.
But the budget proposed by Governor Mills and passed by the legislature this spring contained roughly $70 million for PFAS testing, remediation, and compensation for farmers. That $70 million was on top of $30 million earmarked for PFAS response in the budget signed by Mills last year. Most of that money came from the more than $1 billion budget surplus that Maine expected to accrue, in part because of the massive amount of federal stimulus money that has flowed into the state. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
With the apple harvest in Maine now in full swing, many orchards around the state rely on migrant farm workers to pick the crop. But some farmers say the visa program that allows those migrant workers into the country is too rigid and bureaucratic, and they're urging the Senate to act quickly on a reform package. Some labor organizations, however, say the proposal as written would be a bad deal for workers. Ari Snyder reports.
On a cool September morning at Ricker Hill Orchards in Turner, Omar Worrell carefully unloads a sack of freshly picked Honeycrisp apples into a big plastic container on the back of a trailer.
And we have to do it very gently. I will mash up the products.
Worrell is one of 44 Jamaican workers employed at the orchard during the fall harvest season. He says this is his ninth year working for the Ricker family business. Others have been coming back even longer.
We've had some of these guys that 40 years, 30 years, they keep coming back.
Harry Ricker runs the orchard, which has been in his family since 1803. And he says the business has relied on migrant workers since the end of World War II. These days, they come through the H-2A visa program, which allows agricultural employers to hire temporary foreign workers if the positions can't be filled locally. Ricker says these harvesters are critical to his orchard's operation. But he says the visa program is cumbersome.
We have to have our paperwork in and done 11 weeks before we need help. But we don't know what our crop is going to be then.
Ricker, who is president of the New England Apple Council, says he fields complaints from other growers about workers not showing up in time for the harvest as their applications crawl through multiple government agencies in the U.S. and Jamaica. Ricker and other growers are now calling on the Senate to pass the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, which would expand the H-2A visa program beyond seasonal labor, streamline the application process, and establish a pathway to citizenship for long-term H-2A workers. It would also create three-year visas, reducing the logistical hurdles for workers and employers.
It's going to solve a bunch of those problems, which would be wonderful if it'll pass.
But some national labor groups are firmly opposed to the measure.
Farm workers deserve better, and we're not going to settle for this.
Sonia Singh is co-director of the Food Chain Workers Alliance, an umbrella organization of labor groups. Singh says the pathway to citizenship laid out in the bill is too narrow and demanding. Eligible workers could still have to wait between 4 and 10 years to be able to apply for a green card. Singh also objects to linking the citizenship pathway to an expansion of the H-2A visa program.
There are so many concerns with how it ties workers to one employer, and that once again, just really restricts the ability of workers to organize.
At the same time, the American Farm Bureau Federation is criticizing the bill from the other direction. The group that represents farmers and ranchers objects to a provision that would allow H-2A workers to sue their employers for labor law violations. But one main group, focused on attracting and retaining immigrant workers, says the Farm Workforce Modernization Act strikes a reasonable balance.
When you read the bill, you can tell. You can tell that it's a compromise and neither side got all of what they wanted.
Beth Stickney with the Maine Business Immigration Coalition says while the bill isn't perfect, it does include some key reforms, such as expanding existing farm worker protections to include H-2A workers for the first time and adding regulations aimed at preventing labor recruiters from defrauding H-2A applicants.
The Farm Workforce Modernization Act at least takes the first steps that have been made in a very, very long time to try to improve the H-2A program.
At Ricker Hill Orchards, the crew of Jamaican workers moves steadily down a row of apple trees, filling bucket after bucket with mottled red and yellow fruit. While clipping stems, a worker named Fabian Morgan says if given the opportunity, he would seek permanent status in the U.S.
If it's something on the table, well, yes, because over here you have more opportunity.
But even if the Farm Workforce Modernization Act passes the Senate, Morgan could still have a long wait ahead of him. This is his first season in the U.S., and the current language of the bill says seasonal H-2A workers would only be able to petition for a green card after working in the program for 10 years. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
And And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock on Wednesday morning, a conversation about Vaclav Havel, one of the 20th century's greatest champions of democracy, human rights, and freedom. Colby College is hosting a conference examining Havel's legacy and why it's relevant to today's current events. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thank you for listening.